Hi and welcome to Matrix Moments. This is Saloni, and in today's episode, we're going to be talking about the opportunities in the grocery and e-commerce space post-COVID-19. Joining us for this discussion are Vineet Rao and Suryendu Mehta, the co-founders of DealShare, as well as Tarun Davra, Managing Director at Matrix Partners India, and Gaurav Bhattacharya, Director at Matrix Partners India. DealShare is essentially a social commerce platform that focuses on the grocery and home categories targeted at the tier 2 and 3 cities of India. Through the course of this episode, we plan to cover strategies implemented and measures taken to navigate their way in a post-COVID world, their thoughts on the way forward, as well as learnings and insights from their journey of company building. Tune in.
Welcome, everyone. I am Gaurav from Matrix, and for this podcast and this episode of Matrix Moments, I have with me Vineet Rao and Suryendu Mehta from DealShare, and I have my colleague Tarun from Matrix. Guys, for the benefit of everyone listening in, you can just introduce yourselves.
Thank you so much, GB. Hi guys, my name is Vineet Rao, and I'm one of the founders at DealShare. I was born, brought up in a city called Jaipur, and then I studied at IIT Bombay. I joined a startup called Trilogy initially for the first three and a half years. Then I spent over a decade at Microsoft in Seattle before moving back to India. India definitely shows a lot of promise, a lot of growth, and one of the best places where startups can really be successful. I've already done three startups. The first one I moved back with was called SellCloud, that got acquired by Unity. Then I did two more startups, one in virtual reality area and one in cross-border e-commerce before starting DealShare.
Hi, I'm Suryendu Mehta. I'm also one of the co-founders of DealShare. I take care of supply and business for DealShare. I also grew up in the same city, so both of us belong to Jaipur. And then I passed out of NITI. And spent some good 18 years with good consumer giants of the country. So started with Britannia, then spent some time with Citibank Retail Assets, spent good 8 years with Metro Cash and Carry. And finally, my last stint was with Raymond's FMCG before starting DealShare.
Yes, I think obviously it's on our channel. So a lot of people, you know, have heard us through multiple such video episodes, but just, I guess, in the context of this one, so Gaurav and me, I'm Tarun Davda. Gaurav and me have been involved very closely with DealShare from the first day since we invested. It's been a fantastic journey so far. And Vineet and Mehta, I don't know if you guys remember, but I still remember the first time we visited Jaipur to spend time with you guys and the team. And did the diligence, and I think we ended up at 4 a.m. with Vineet on the floor and at Amajan's house. So yeah. So it's been obviously a great, fantastic journey since then. So you know, idea of this is, you know, we've been hearing a lot about sort of grocery tech and what's happening in India, and you know, Gaurav will come to that and sort of will ask you guys to share your experience of navigating COVID, you know, in the current context. But maybe I'll start with the first question, which is, why don't you guys spoke about your individual background, but talk a little bit about the thought behind DealShare. You know, grocery is a very large market, but it's also been a very, very difficult market to penetrate, which shows up both in terms of organized retail penetration as well as online penetration in grocery. And more importantly, it's been a even more difficult business to actually make money. So talk about like a little bit about, you know, why did you guys, you know, still decide to go into this sector and pick this space, and what are you all doing differently? What makes DealShare special?
Absolutely. So let me start first on that, right? So if we look at the Indian evolution, right? You know, the market really started picking up, you know, over 10 years back when a lot of people came on internet. That was the first generation internet users, more westernized, and adopted e-commerce also pretty well. That was the first wave of e-commerce. We saw, you know, from the top tier cities, everybody starting to order a lot more than what it was before. But, you know, the penetration really did not flow into the, you know, tier two, tier three cities as much, and also into the middle income and lower middle income group. The first reason being they were not even online at that time. Internet was very expensive and it was something only for the sort of chosen ones, right? But since last few years, internet penetration has rapidly increased in India and it has pretty much brought the whole country online. So today, if you look at it, I mean, even if you go to a village, you know, you'll see people with the mobile phones, you know, watching TikTok or being on WhatsApp or watching videos, right? Or reading news and, on Daily Hunt. So I think it has opened up a much bigger opportunity than what it was. And now when you look at the consumption side of the market, India is an $800 billion retail market. Very soon it'll be the third largest retail market, right, of the world. The difference between India and what you see in countries like US and China is majority of the consumption of that retail market over here is really grocery. So the grocery share of the market is almost 70%. It's higher than any other country, any other large country like you know, like India. So when you have to think about e-commerce, or when you have to think about really, you know, bringing people online and getting them to transact, you have to start where the relevance is very high. It has to sort of relate to the people in terms of their needs. One of the, you know, Amazon became very successful in the US by selling all the items that were highly relevant for the mass population. So in India, actually, the sector that will like make e-commerce really work is grocery to begin with, right? And that is something that we validated right in the beginning. It was not something that, you know, we just decided we are only going to do grocery, you know. Look at the name also, it's Deal Share, right? We didn't start with you know, a name which was just grocery related. But we realized very quickly that majority of the need of the consumers, especially the mass market population, right? When I'm talking about 70% of overall retail, when you go to middle income and lower middle income, it's actually 80%, right? So everybody just wanted us basically to sell groceries to them. And that's where we decided this is a huge opportunity. And if we are able to crack this segment, you know, it'll be bigger than anything else I think the world has seen.
Vineet, I think that's a fantastic segue into the next part of the discussion, because I know that what Medda and you are building is a little bit adapted to what we are seeing today, right? So talk a little bit about what makes DealShare unique and special. And the approach that you guys follow.
Absolutely. So like we said, right, I mean, for e-commerce to be economically viable, there needs to be a very deep penetration into the market. In any country, if you look at it, you know, the strong success behind Amazon and Alibaba in US and China is because they were able to go very deep into the market and, you know, a large percentage of population started using it. Now, if you look at India, you know, the mass population over here really, like we already discussed, you know, the need of them is really groceries, right? Majority of their purchases are on a limited number of items. The consumption is on a small selection. They are not at a point where they really want a very large selection and they are going to buy from, you know, many different classes of items. So that is where we really started with. And this is also based on all the experiments we did. We realized that, you know, we don't really need to sell millions of items to really capture all the demand. The demand can be captured on a much smaller number of items for the population. And that makes DealShare very unique. We do not really are a model where we list any kind of or all kinds of products because that actually confuses the users also. The middle income user is typically the one who's going to the Kirana shops or, you know, small shops for other products as well. And they are tuned to not looking at too many different types of items before they make a buying purchase, right? So one thing that we did was keep very sharp assortment. And from that itself, we got a lot of strategic advantages because we were able to aggregate the demand a lot more on individual products. We were able to go up the chain very fast. So in a typical retail scenario, you know, you'll be moving slowly and eventually reaching the source, which is the manufacturer or the farmer. But our volumes were so high right in the beginning that we were able to sort of start talking to the manufacturers directly. And that is how, you know, you really get the supply chain benefits and you are able to pass on phenomenal prices back to the consumers, right? Not only that, that actually enabled us to build operations in a very different way, a way that nobody had built before and something that we had to build from scratch. So one thing that DealShare does very differently is all of our operations are done by us, right? We build the model ourselves and tune the model to be extremely efficient on smaller number of SKUs, thereby driving our you know, operations cost very low. Right, that is also one of the fundamental themes behind DealShare. Now, on the demand side, what you'll see very differently is the user experience of DealShare. Right, it is very different than any other e-commerce company in India. It is built for the mass population. It is vernacular. We are in all the languages for all the states that we are present in. Again, for with a smaller set of SKUs, you know, it's actually a lot easy. If I have 100 million products, for me to convert it into every language in itself is a non-trivial task. But for us to have all of our content in all the language actually is much easier. And the other things what we have done in UX is just build comfort with the consumer, right? This is a very different consumer, you know. People in tier one cities are very busy. They don't have time. They are, you know, they want the convenience. But here people have time, they are very cultural, you know, they are very friends and family oriented. So we build the whole experience that makes them very comfortable. You'll see a lot of things that we do, which is around gamification and sharing. And people like to share, right? I mean, I'm sure all of you guys have your friends and family from other cities and you'll see lots of messages on WhatsApp, right? So these people really, their first time on the you know, internet, they really like to share. It's like you know, one of those days while I was in high school, and you know, email used to be the fun thing, right? I mean, we all used to circulate jokes on email. Nobody does that now, but that's what WhatsApp is for them, right? So so yeah, it has been a very interesting and phenomenally exciting learning journey for us as we continue to work with you know, our consumer base.
Edda, I would just love to get your input on this as well. So yeah. I know in various conversations we've had over time, you know, we've asked ourselves, what is the vision that we are building with, right? And 5 years out or 10 years out, what would you want to see DealShare become? And we've spoken about how you guys really respect what, say, a PDD has done in China, or even closer back home, what a DMart has done in India, more in the offline context. So talk a little bit about, give us some color on, you know, what's the vision and where do you see DealShare and what elements maybe of these two models that you guys are trying to sort of, you know, build upon?
Yeah, so essentially, I mean, when we started the business, we knew that the TAM that we are targeting is extremely large. It is, let's say, 70-80% of India. And if we are catering to their essential needs, the business itself can become very, very big. However, what was not proven at that time, none of the existing players had proven that, is that this can become profitable and it can become extremely capital efficient. I think these were the two big tenets which were not proven. The market was already there. And from day one, what we have focused on is creating not only a big business, but also a business which is on the path to profitability, on a fast path to profitability, and extremely capital efficient. I mean, it will be, let's say, 5-10x better than any other player who has tried that market. Now, which also meant that we had to do something very, very differently. And so we looked around where the real money lies. So if and we realized that from what the consumer is made to pay to what basically the manufactured product is actually costing for a lead brand, there is a huge difference. And that huge difference is neither benefiting the consumer nor the retailer, it is going into the top brands pocket or maybe the sales and marketing channels. Now that is what we attack. Fortunately for us, but a little bit unfortunate for the country was that these small manufacturers were not organized. They were not on one platform. There was very little even the authorities had done, like in other countries, to bring them all together. I think what it does is increase the affordability of the middle income population. So if you ask me one motto, one cause why I'm into this business, I want to increase the affordability of the middle income population of the country. If they were buying 2-3 things earlier, they can buy now 5. They can buy all of that from us. And eventually we will have all the categories also represented. We are increasing the categories. And that would in turn get the country into a consumerism cycle. Now the economy will grow when there will be exchange of hands and there will be more and more of consumption. And that's the lead project, if you have to say that what we are essentially going to do, we are essentially going to increase their affordability by bringing the merchandise at low cost to them and bringing it all at their doorsteps. At again, like Vineet said, at very low operations cost as well.
Medha and Vineet, I want to change track a little bit here. And we're in the middle of a once in a century event, right? So I know you guys are in the thick of things. I think would love to hear a little bit about just how you are seeing consumption patterns change before and after COVID, right? Would love to hear anecdotes and what you guys are seeing.
Yeah.
So one other thing about deal share, right? When we started this, while we grew up in Jaipur, currently our families are in Bangalore and Mumbai. But we decided that we wanted to choose a smaller city and incubate over there, because if we are able to crack Jaipur, then we'll be able to crack the whole India, right? So we moved over here and we started working over here. We built the team over here. We built the business over here, and then we started expanding. So very quickly we reached to the largest city, Mumbai, as well as cities with 50,000 population like Dausa and Tonk. And believe it or not, our model works very beautifully, whether it's a large city or whether it's a very small town, right? But it is also something that we've built really grounds up. So just before COVID came in, lockdowns came in, we decided that, we'll come over here to our main cities, right? Which were at that time, Jaipur and Ahmedabad. And really figure out, right? And since then we've been here essentially. And I think it was a really good decision because we did not know what to expect. I think coming over here again, working very quickly with the government authorities, the government has been very supportive with us. And also we've built very good relations with the government over the last 18 months in the places that we've been in. Again, due to the nature of our business. What we realized is that the patterns for the consumers were changing very rapidly, right? So for us, the demand really surged, and people who are not even interested right now in terms of, trying online models were quickly asking each other in terms of, how do I sort of order online, right? So the education also, whoever were our consumers started becoming our influencers and started telling all their friends and family that, hey, you buy from here, right? Being here, also helped us solve the supply challenges very quickly, very fast. Now, again, due to the business that we work with a lot with local manufacturers and contract manufacturers, we were able to solve the supply side disruptions very fast because, the factories right over here, right? While the national level supplies continue to be highly disrupted, which we've seen in the organized retail, how much disruption there has been. I'm sure all of you guys, when you go to any of the stores, sometimes you'll not find the product you need. But we were doing, the required products to our consumers very fast, and we were the only ones, frankly. So the dependability also got created fast, right? What we have seen is a behavior shift from just a convenience to a necessity. And I think that is something which would have happened for, over a long period of time, but is happening, very rapidly. And I think once the behavior starts forming and once consumers start appreciating about the benefits they are getting, whether it is for the price, whether it is for the home deliveries, whether it is just for the fun, I think that is going to give disproportionate benefits in the post-COVID world also for players like us.
Very interesting. And Vineet, you mentioned supply. So I want to pull Medha in over here as well, because I know he drives a lot of supply. Medha, I know we have a unique strategy where we go to local manufacturers. What does COVID mean for them? Is it a positive, negative, when they're up against the larger FMCG players?
Yeah, so we can answer it in two parts. One is what does it mean for them during COVID, and what does it mean post-COVID? So during COVID, I think, so they obviously faced a lot of challenges because they were not very powerful enough to approach the authorities and get their basically facilities up and running, get support on in terms of transportation and all of that. I think that is where we came in with a lot of help to them. Most of them, I mean, every local manufacturer that we have worked with and we have deep relationships, most of them even know us personally, and they called us because they were struggling to start their setup and they did not know what to do. They knew for sure that there is demand in the market, and even the national players were not able to service the demand. They could see a business opportunity for them, and yet they were helpless. So we because of our good connect with the local authorities, we were able to help a lot of them open up their facilities, also get special permissions, because they were essentially into the essential goods. But however, there was some confusion or the other where the local authority in that city or in that locality was not allowing them to open, or even if they're allowed to open, they were open for only 2 days in a week, something like that. Some local nuances to that. All of that we could help. And as a result of which, they could supply us much faster than the national. So we have some bit of national supplies as well. And that is why we know that the national supplies were disrupted a lot. So the local suppliers could give us supplies before the national suppliers could even give that. And I would not take the names of national suppliers. These are the biggest in the industry. They could not service the demand of the city that we are operating in. Not just us, they were not servicing to any other player. We had checked, right? So that's one part. I think they are navigating well now. People like us have supported also these local suppliers. With the Prime Minister and the government now talking of local supplies and anti-China thing coming in and all of this happening, this part of the business will definitely get a boost. And it will get a boost because people will start noticing them. I think government will also put in some more real efforts to bring them all together and make their lives better, give them more jobs and all of that. And if platforms like us also grow fast and there are many more who join this bandwagon, I think it is going to be a very good journey for them. And that is how other countries have moved. I think if you look at the whole difference between a brand owner earning more in this country versus a retailer is because the organization of these small manufacturers has not happened. The moment you do organization of these small manufacturers with a concentrated effort, whether it is public or private, doesn't matter. The disparity between incomes of a retailer and the income of a brand owner actually goes down. If you look in countries like US and China, the difference is much lower. In India, it is much higher. The big brand owners earn a lot more than the retailers. Now that disparity will go, and these local manufacturers will basically have a larger play now in the economy.
I'll just add one point on what I think Vineet said, alluded to the increase in digital adoption. I think just, the reality is all of us know, if I take a step back, right, while there are a lot of sort of short-term disruptions that, various e-commerce players have seen, including DealShare, all of us realize that in terms of what this means for overall digital adoption, it has definitely added at least 5 years, right? In terms of there is at least a 5-year acceleration, if not more. And I think, a lot of people sometimes forget, I don't know if you guys remember, there was a SARS outbreak in China in 2003 in Hong Kong and China. And a lot of Alibaba's growth actually came because a similar dynamic played out at that time, where people actually started going online. A lot of the manufacturers and your suppliers started going online. And that triggered that sort of massive growth phase that Alibaba went through. even if you take the sort of greater earthquake in 2011 in Japan, that was another reason why like players like Rakuten, for example, were able to really sort of penetrate digitally, right? And I think this is, like I said, you know, while I know it's very, very painful on the ground today, but, you know, eventually I do believe that, and, you know, it's a well-known fact now, this has accelerated digital adoption across categories and definitely in the categories that you guys are in.
Yes. I think one very good example is Ahmedabad. I mean, this is this tells us how people basically are reacting to the change in environment. Now, in Ahmedabad, I know some of you might also know that some time back they made cash on delivery absolutely no-no. And we were very worried whether the customers will really... So first 10 days, there was no e-commerce, no kirana, nothing. So the government said that there will be nothing, no business, even if it is essentials. And then they came back saying that, okay, we will open, but there is no COD. There's only online payment. Now, if you look at our business, it was 99% plus COD at that time across all cities. And we were very worried as to whether we will lose business and how would people react. I don't know what they would take from. And to our surprise, people just started paying online. And these were guys who were never paying online. So an event like this, like you pointed out, Tarun, is going to change the way businesses happen. Is definitely going to change the way people react to various businesses, and adoption levels will, like you said, it is 5 years, maybe even more faster now. The tech adoption is going to be really, really fast in the country.
Yeah.
I'll change track a little bit for the last set of questions. I think, this is clearly one of the largest markets coming online, as you guys described. How do you think about your edge, and you know, Tarun, would love to hear your perspective as well on how do you think startups can outcompete and win against the larger companies. So maybe we'll start off with Medha and Vineet, and then Tarun, would love to get your view as well.
Yeah. So I think this entire change of environment means a lot of new things happening on ground as far as business is concerned. Now, the edge that startups have over established organization is that they are closer to the customer base or the end consumer. They are basically building things with first principle basis and on ground. And as a result of which, the real change which is happening on ground is felt faster to a startup than to an established organization, which is basically doing a lot of reviews every day on their standard formats and are still stuck with their strategies, which might be 3 years old. Now, that agility of a startup will definitely allow the startups to basically move faster towards the changes and cater to the changing customer needs much faster than the bigger organizations. Apart from that, obviously, startups have much younger talent than what established organizations have. And this younger talent also comes with a lot of energy to do new things with changing environment, and that adds to the advantage of a startup, and I think that is why startups are better poised, better in a better position to cater to this changing environment than established organization. Having said that, obviously established organizations have a lot of capital, and you never know what they would do. So the jury is still out there to decide who will win, but obviously it will be a good fight to have.
Thanks, Medha. So I'd just like to add a little bit. I think Medha has covered it beautifully. I think we are definitely at an inflection point, right? I don't think there's any doubt about it. And I think COVID has just accelerated that inflection point, which would have been, you know, sort of a 2 year journey to a 2 month journey, right? In terms of the changing consumer behavior and the network effects that are available over right now. If you look at the market right now, right, you know, while we talk about players like us and other players in terms of what they're doing with, you know, home deliveries, but I want to tell you that actually there are, I don't know, hundreds of thousands of, you know, very small players, which in very hyper locality have started doing this, right? In our cities itself, I get so many calls of people trying to reach out to me and say, okay, you know, I'm only in Raja Park and, you know, I want to, you know, I've already started delivering fruits and vegetables to all the people in the locality. I've created my own WhatsApp group and, you know, people just place order and we deliver, right? And everybody's happy and, you know, we do like already 50 orders a day and so on. So this inflection, and earlier, you know, that guy used to be a travel agent, right? So so I think this massiveness of the market and customers sort of adopting to this and finding value into this is basically the inflection point we are at. And I think startups, you know, obviously have an advantage, right? You look at any other country, you look at US, you look at, you know, China, ultimately it was one of the startups at the inflection point, you know, taking over the market, right? It was Amazon, it was Alibaba. And like Meta said, right, the benefit startups really get is, you know, they build everything based on first principles. You know, they don't have any DNA to begin with. So they build the DNA based on what they learn on the ground, right? For big organizations, you know, it's very tough. You know, I was at Microsoft for 10 years, right? I mean, in front of our eyes, we saw, you know, Google take over the search space, you know, Amazon take over the cloud space, and sort of Apple take over the phone space. Microsoft actually had the technologies before them. It was not that, you know, they did not, right? But it was all about, you know, how do you sort of learn every day, you know, multiple times a day and are able to react to it rather than put a 6 month or a 12 month plan in place and execute on that, right? I mean, for a market that is growing really fast, that is not, and history has proven, it's always a startup that wins.
Alan, what about you putting your investor hat on?
Yeah, so, you know, I'll actually answer that question more in the context of deal share than a more generic answer, because that's probably going to be more helpful. You know, I go back to the time when we were looking to make the investment decision in deal share, right? We knew it was a big market. We knew a very small part of that market was organized. We also knew that a much smaller part of that was unorganized. Technically, it sounds like a great market to invest in as an early stage VC, right? But what we also knew is that there are multiple players that have tried to make the model work. Some of them are around today, many of them are not around today. The ones who are around today have still not, while they have been able to get top line scale, it is still a very challenging stage in terms of unit economics. Right, they haven't been able to make the unit economics work, and hence, if you see what, you know, typically one would look at in terms of capital efficiency, it's not been a sort of easy journey, right? And so I think in that was a context with which, you know, we evaluated, and Gauri, you were part of that. We evaluated DealShare and said, hey, is there something unique? And so, you know, maybe bringing together what both Vinita and Medha said is, you know, what is that differentiation? Because if you're trying to do the same thing that somebody else has done, and you're saying, hey, I'm going to be incrementally better, or I'm going to be, you know, try to, you know, do things more smartly, or I will work harder, that's never going to be enough, right? Everyone talks about that 10x differentiation or the 10x user experience. Many of the companies today, by the way, are providing a fantastic user experience, right? It's actually the economics and the business model which is challenging. And so I think what I had liked about DealShare was the differentiated model on largely, you know, I would say three or maybe four parameters. One is starting with the way they source, right? And thinking about the relevance of the category, the SKU width, how that SKU width basically dictates what the supply chain will look like and how simplified the supply chain is. Because of that simplified supply chain, what kind of margins I can extract over the long term, and what is the cost at which I can deliver the product to the customer, because I'm operating at a average order value which is much lower than what some of the incumbents operate, right? And then when you add the differentiated sort of delivery model to it and the differentiated TG, for me, that basically, you know, the flywheel basically made sense and said, okay, these guys, and while we're still very early and a lot needs to be proven, from a thesis perspective, I could very clearly see that this is a very differentiated model that is being attempted. And if it works, it could actually solve a lot of the issues around the business model, you know, capital efficiency that we've seen with some of them. At the same time, if this grows, the market that you're going after, which is the urban sort of middle class and urban, sorry, the middle class and the lower middle class, both in urban cities and in tier 2, tier 3 cities, is a massive segment that is actually coming online. They're already online, they're starting to transact online now. And so I think that was, you know, in my mind, A, I, you know, look at differentiation, and, you know, and second is, you know, what is the right to win, right? And, you know, we talk a lot about this internally, which is, okay, you know, why is this going to work, right? What is the reason? And I think, you know, between the team that, you know, Meda and Vinita put together and their own background, I think with the experience of, you know, understanding FMCG, it definitely did seem like a interesting, you know, sort of combination. And so I think no pressure, Vinita and Meda. Expectations are high. And I know you guys have done a good job so far. And, you know, hopefully you guys will continue to sort of, you know, execute on the model.
As I want to end with one fun question, and you know, would love to get your views on one consumer behavior that you think will stick post-COVID and one that will not stick post-COVID. So would love to get your views around the table. Vinit, why don't we start off with you?
Sure. Very, very interesting question over there, right? So I think consumers are... you know, going to stick on the digital transacting platforms more now. So I do believe that, you know, before that it was, yeah, you know, let's just try it out. But now this, and especially India is very interesting because the COVID period has also been very long. So the lockdowns, it's not like many other countries.
It's only getting started.
Yeah, it seems like it's only getting started, right? So I think, you know, a lot of them, whether it is through just the social network, you know, peer pressure, whether it's just through necessity, I think have started doing a lot more things remotely. And I think, you know, if they're doing 50 things remotely right now, you know, transacting online or meeting people or, whatever, right, doing WhatsApp video calls. I think a lot of, you know, that part is going to stick and just become a way of life, right? Whatever they found value in, they're not going to go back to the older ways. Now, the thing that is not going to stick, I mean, people are, you know, India, if you look at as a population, right? I mean, we are very, very social. So right now, everybody's sort of locked down, not trying to meet their friends and families, and you're having to do everything sort of remotely. I think that part, you know, we'll probably pick up very fast, right? Once the scare of COVID is done, and I think people will get out there, people will again become social. I think it'll be 6 months from now, or whenever, right? When we are past this, this will just be a past thing. And I don't see culturally, you know, we getting different, right?
Meta, what about you?
So I think people would still, so like we saw in COVID during this period that people started purchasing in larger quantities, but lesser number of times. This behavior will stick around a bit. So people would, as far as, because they will feel that it is very comfortable. So they will suddenly get used to purchasing a lesser number of times, but a little more and getting some discounts and all of that. So that thing will stick around and that is helpful for e-commerce because e-commerce would be able to give more value also. Like Vinit said, I think one of the answers on my mind was that people are social and people will start moving out, which means that obviously people will start buying from physical retail. And that is why we are also looking at the online to offline model, because that's a long-term model. One extra point I want to give, because that's already taken. So I think people love cash in India. And there is some part of cash that cannot go out because of the economy that India has. So cash will come into picture. Right now, people are refraining from using cash a lot. But transactions in cash will come in again, while some adoption of online payments would happen.
Arun, what about you?
So I think, you know, the good news is that there is a lot of first-time buyer salience that we are seeing. You know, various reports that we read is saying that, you know, across categories, anywhere between, you know, 10 to 20% of customers are actually first-time buyers, you know, which is a great news. My sense is that will stick. I don't think it will be easy for people to go back. Especially if this extends for some period of time, right? Because then you're building sort of habit. So I do think that will stick. And actually, you know, Vinit, I remember in one of our conversations, you had actually made a very good point that how you serve this customer who otherwise has not been used to ordering online, and in some ways is almost forced to order online, right? That first time experience is so critical, because you know, if they were to come on a D-share and for whatever reason you are stocked out or you can't deliver, or you said you'll deliver but then you know cancel the order later, and if you do that, you know, maybe once they will forgive you, the second time they will, you know, they may not forgive you, and then they'll never come back, right? Because like you said, there are a lot of these small mom and shop operations that started in different cities where somebody was aggregating orders and, you know, delivering it to these communities. People have already figured out now basically what is the new way of it, right? And so I think it is very incumbent on platforms like you guys as to these customers who are coming first time, how do you build trust, especially where it is so hard for you to do that right now because you yourself are dealing with consumers. So I think some of that, I mean, most of that hopefully will stick, right? Which is what I think the bet is. I think what will not stick is there seems to be an almost unnatural increase in certain categories. And I think, you know, over time, you know, we will go back to, like today, for example, there's very little apparel sales happening. And that's obvious because people aren't going out as much. But, you know, hygiene products have suddenly just, you know, gone through the roof, right? Or certain other, you know, categories have just gone through the roof. And I think that, you know, over time will naturally sort of go back to more standard consumption patterns. And so a lot of people, while you take, will, you know, take short-term advantage of this, eventually, I think people will go back to sort of typically more standard consumption patterns.
Fantastic. Tarun, Vineet, Mehta, thank you so much for doing this. And Vineet and Mehta, wish you the very best as you navigate this time.
Thank you. Thanks.
Thank you so much for
Thank you guys. Really appreciate you guys doing this at this time. I know it's been a very busy time for you.
Thanks, Tarun.
Thank you. Bye.
Thanks for tuning in. For more Matrix Moments episodes, you can head to www.matrixpartners.in/blog. You can also follow us on Twitter, LinkedIn, and YouTube for more updates.